Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
This episode is brought to you by Undeniably Dairy. Dairy farmers are more than farmers. They're climate caretakers. They see water as a precious resource. Most farmers recycle water up to 4 times, from chilling the milk to irrigating the crops. And some even use technology to turn manure into renewable energy. To learn more about what dairy farmers are doing to make their farms more sustainable, visit usdairy.com.
Rambo John Jay, born 7-6-47, Bowie, Arizona, of Indian-German descent. It's a hell of a combination. Joined the Army 8-6-64, accepted Special Forces Specialization, light weapons. Cross-trained as medic, helicopter and language qualified, 59 confirmed kills, 2 silver stars, 4 bronze, 4 purple hearts, Distinguished Service Cross, and the Medal of Honor.
You got around, didn't you?
We get to win this time?
No.
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello and welcome to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 587. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian. If he's alive, then the war... Wait. If he's alive, then the war, I still alive, right? I don't know what the hell I wrote there, Dunaway.
I still alive. Oh, hi. This week on Film Sack, we take a break from our Rock Quarry prison workout and take a shirtless flashback to 1985 thanks to our former boss, HBO Max, soon to be Colonel Max. I don't know. But it takes our hairless, smooth as butter and sweaty as butter body. Wait, are we made out of butter? He takes our butter body and drops it off in Vietnam to revisit the horrors of the war. To remind us our country hates us. Reciprocate my love, damn you, or I'll shove this explosive tip arrow right up your coke-stealing hole. That's right, those cokes ain't free of charge. They are free as in freedom, not free as in my love for my country. Anywho, I met a nice lady on my trip. She died, but not before asking me to remember her, and I was like, yeah, I remember you. And then she rolled her eyes and went to sleep. So I took her lucky charm necklace. Well, not so lucky, I suppose, but I took it just the same. I cut off part of her dress and used that for a bandana on the only part of my body that has hair, a mop on my top, and then I got to killing everything. Oh, yeah. And I buried her in the mud during monsoon season next to a creek, so I suspect the villagers will be getting a downstream surprise soon enough. Randy, do you hear that? I think it's a motorbike from the local village. You know what that means. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yep. Our Vietnamese food is here. Yeah. And for some reason, I am horny. Oh, no. I got Pavlov's pants. I hear that motorbike.
Oh my lord! I don't know how you do these. I really don't. I worry about you. I do. I worry.
It's not to analyze it. It's, you know, it's like the scientists can try, but there's really nothing they'd be able to.
Yeah, there's a future where a room full of doctors try to suss out how you pulled these off, but I don't know how you're going to do it.
I'm really just AI, is all I am.
Well, with us, secondly, we have Randy. This sure looks like a Friday night episode of the A Team, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. Did I ever tell y'all about the time I worked as a high-powered government bureaucrat in charge of overseas military operations?
No, sir.
That's a true story. It's true. I was somehow powerful enough to underwrite any sort of military operation I wanted. And believe it or not, I could just have men freed from prison. Yep, it's true. Amazing powers given to me by some agency. You know, let's just say the agency. I don't really, I don't know if I want. It's all. I don't know. I just know what I know is that you two are going to be a successful, you know, bureaucrat as long as you follow my three rules. Number one, chew cigars. I mean, that's it. That's the whole rule. Chew cigars. Number two, wear those bureaucrat clothes. You know, even when you're in a militarized bunker ordering around commandos, you know the clothes. The clothes I'm talking about are the ones where no matter where you are in Southeast Asia, there's a dry cleaner right down the street. Right. Number three, never bring along more than one actual currently serving military officer, and never let that be a man with a higher rank than colonel, lieutenant colonel, if possible. You can't push around a brigadier general, and you're going to need that officer to give whatever Dukes of Hazzard hijinks you're pulling in the jungle the veneer of respectability. In the end, the difference between a rogue commando stabbing you in the face with a his name knife and merely gifting you the his name knife by stabbing it into the desk next to your face is going to be that officer's sway over the commando. All that man wants is love. He just wants love. It's so beautiful. There's nothing you can know that isn't known. There's nothing you can see that isn't shown. There's nowhere you can be that isn't where you're meant to be. I love you, Rambo.
Oh, man.
I love you, Rambo knife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All you need is love, Rambo.
All you need is love, Rambo. All you need it. No, it doesn't work.
Reading Rambo.
Reading Rambo. Reading, oh, my Rambo. Gosh, dang it. That's a better alternate title than I could have thought of. I'm going to write that down and then give Ibbot credit later. That was fantastic. With us finally, Brian. He's soaked in a pig diarrhea. Oh, sorry. He's soaked in pig diarrhea for a very long time once too, Ibbot.
That was such an intricate trench system. Yeah, all right. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, this is Rambo number two. And it's not playing.
I
son
know what
of
you're
a
doing,
bitch.
Though.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. No, I got it. I just going to close it and reopen it. That's what happened last time.
Okay.
I could have you guys just do it a cappella, but this is so much more fun.
Okay. All right. Ish,
And here we go.
Yeah, we're getting
all right,
there.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Rambo number two.
Uh-huh.
Ah, here we go. You guys hear that?
Yeah, got it.
I hear it.
All right. Good. I've got, you know, 4 seconds left on the intro, and then I can start singing. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Bet you didn't think your boy Rambo could count that high. Off to Vietnam to save some prisoners of war. Troutman found me breaking rocks, but I really don't want to take pictures. Don't want to bust them out. Shoot my gun in the air. Proceed to shout, sharpen my knife while the whole amount nips, quiver full of arrows with explosive tips. Coming for you, Murdoch, you're gonna be a witness. But first, I gotta find a 24-hour fitness copter guy, Cobra Kai, but he's really just a bozo. I wanna kick him in the dojo. If you got a mission, I'm sendable, and my freedom is dependable. For only Troutman, I'm amenable. When I'm being tortured, I'm bendable. My methods are often questionable, but for POWs, I'm dependable. If I get slashed, I'm mendable, but I'll never be expendable.
Nice. Nice. You need to post the lyrics somewhere.
Yeah. Also, I got a question.
Yeah.
I have a technical question.
Yes.
How do you... oh, my gosh. How do you know what song to do? Like, I need to know more of the process here. I'm blown away by that.
Because like, Rambo number two sounds like Mambo number five.
Oh, exactly. Mambo was, Rambo? Okay.
That was exactly where it came from. Like, there's, what am I going to do for Rambo number two? And then it hit me, Rambo number two.
I love that. Oh, my gosh, that's great. Well done.
I'll give you the lyrics. You can put them on the Patreon. Yes. How's that?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. For real, let's do that. All right, patrons, you're getting something cool this week.
Something cool is what you're going to get.
We're talking about something pretty cool. At least I thought it was in 85. Do I still think that? Well, you'll find out shortly when we talk about Rambo First Blood Part 2, which Scott Fletcher will explain in more detail.
Rambo First Blood Part 2. Rambo returns to the jungles of Vietnam on a mission to infiltrate an enemy base camp and rescue the American POWs still held captive there.
That's true. That's exactly the plot.
That's what happens.
Yeah. The POWs.
The POWs. POWs. Yeah. Stands for the prisoners of war. And he does exactly what he promises. Boy, one of them has real bad teeth. We'll get into that later. Anyway.
One of them, they all had, they all had pretty bad paint on their teeth. Yeah. I didn't understand that. Too.
They went all in on that. They were like, hey, they've been trapped there. I mean, 85. So they've been there for 15 plus years.
Yeah, that's what felt weird. At first, I was like, am I looking at this wrong? Was this supposed to have happened earlier or something? Because they've been there for quite some time and moving them around for years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they like those getting fed okay. None of them look like...
They look pretty freaking blow them and they'd fall over.
I mean, next to Rambut. But yeah, I mean, come on.
Yeah, they didn't look too sickly. You're right.
Can we please start at the beginning, though?
Yeah,
like, do it. I'm really, like... I felt like the beginning of this movie was so different than I was expecting.
In what way?
I don't know what I was expecting, but I was not expecting these grandiose shots of what turns out to be Mexico, but like is like the American West and Stallone is in prison, right? He's in a prison camp where he got sent because, you know, he was responsible for quite a few deaths
in the first movie. Deaths like that.
That was hardcore.
And like, it starts with this shot of this rock face and it gets blown up. Like all of these explosives go off.
TriStar presents explosion. Right.
Yeah. And the camera, the shot must have been up on a tower. This camera shot pans down to the men working in this prison camp. Right. And I was just like, my mouth was wide open and I was sitting up thinking, you only get one chance for this shot. You get one take and that's it ever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And well, it was all right.
But see, this is, you're already getting to one of my problems. And aside from the last quarter of the film, which is the only quarter of the film I really remember, because I saw this when I was,
that was the 15. Most action packed part. Yeah.
Yeah. It was, I think that stuff holds up and is actually real good. It's an amazing end to the film, but I think the first, three quarters of the film are maybe half, I'll say, just to give it more credit than that. But the first half felt like an A-Team episode. The music, the way it was directed, the way it was filmed.
We're
like,
meeting in some warehouse behind some boxes or something. Everything's in a warehouse.
Yeah.
It's pretty rough.
Right.
And
the whole thing was whole thing was filmed in Mexico, and they have to, you know, they have to make do in a lot of cases, you know, like that when you go outside and you look at the airstrip, like it's always shot from one particular angle. So you can't see, you know, the rest of the Mexican world around it. And I thought that was okay. That didn't.
Oh, it was fine. The scenery, it's not, scenery's not the problem. It's just, it's the cinematography. The cinematography felt like TV. The sound work definitely felt like television. The music was
Jerry Goldsmith.
Oh man, the music in particular. I'll just, you know what? I'll do this early. I'm going to give you guys some music from here. It is. This sounds like the A-Team to me.
Or does the A-Team sound like this?
Well, I mean, they were. This is what.
I feel like you actually picked some of the better music from the movie to try to make your point. Like the very, very beginning, the first bar of music is bad. It's like awful.
It was a bit more like this.
I found that interesting, trying to nail down what instruments were used at the very top of that. It felt discordant. I kind of liked it.
It's like Blue Man Group banging on PVC pipes. Okay.
Yeah.
You know what? Now it's better. It's better in my head.
It begins bad and it ends terribly bad.
I thought it was kind of an interesting experiment. It felt very experimental in a movie that shouldn't be experimental, but it felt like, how do we transition our world traveling through music? Because they essentially do the world traveling through music. You know, they didn't pop out and go, oh, look, here's a, you know, like Indiana Jones style map where we got the plane flying across. We transitioned from one location to the next, basically through music, because most of the scenery wasn't getting it there. So it kind of started off with this weird, almost industrial kind of weirdness, and then it kind of migrated into some Asian type music towards the end. So, I mean, was it great? No, but was it kind of an interesting experiment?
Kind of. I mean, it's Jerry Goldsmith. Easily our most sacked composer, right? It's got to be.
Yeah.
Got to be that.
It went from this weird things that I couldn't recognize, this discordant, and then it went into like a military kind of thing, and then it went into like this, like I said, this Asian type of vibe.
This is our 29th Jerry Goldsmith.
29.
Oh, wow.
That makes him, he's leader, right? He has to be.
Yeah, for sure. And some of them are pretty good. Like scores, some of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I feel like this movie
Jerry Goldsmith's like, they can't all be winners. Yeah. What do you want from me?
But like we've got, like in this list, we've got Alien, we've got Air Force One, we've got The Omen. These are all great scores.
Yeah. Not to mention this, you know, all the Trek we simul watched, and you know, him being in charge of TNG music and all that. Like it's his signature sound when he's not doing full orchestration. And that's when Jerry Goldsmith and I don't see eye to eye.
What you just played from the middle of the movie was orchestrated.
Yeah.
I thought it was real good.
It was okay. Not that other one I played though. This piece of garbage here.
That's terrible.
That is not orchestrated.
I kind of found it interesting because it made me wanted to dig deeper, but only from the point of I love movie music and I wanted to know more. Not from the wow, that's cool. No. It was more like, that's fascinating. What is that?
Yeah. Odd. It is. It's an odd
choice. Yeah, but that doesn't put you into the film. You know, if you're sitting there thinking about, wow, how did they make
it? It actually dragged me deeper into the film. Oddly. Okay. Oddly, it was working for me. I don't know why.
It's kind of an obvious thing, but you know, music is, a score is supposed to just enhance what you're seeing, not distract you from it.
Yeah,
right.
Even if it just sets the tone, it should do it in a way that's not like, hey, we're in part of Asia. Dun, 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 dun. You know, here's all the instruments you use in Asia.
Yeah.
I think I was having trouble getting into the movie anyway, because a lot of the visuals, the music actually drug me in further, because the visuals were very like set pieces. A lot of things like the close up shots and stuff, it all felt like sets. And it, you know, the rain, oh my God, the rain machines were horrible because they were pouring rain just on the actors. Yeah, it's like, do they have a rain cloud over them? Mm-hmm. And so it was a lot of visual things that were going on.
Which I wrote down several times. I'm underlining and sticking my pencil into the paper over and over. Does this movie, and I'm coming for you, formerly director that I love, George Cosmatos. I'm coming for you. What were you thinking shooting in midday sunlight and then darkening every outdoor shot?
Yeah. Oh, is that what they did? I didn't know they did that. I couldn't. I thought it looked
another
funky,
movie just recently. What was that?
Yeah, what was the
darkening? The film was annoyingly dark.
What was the one we saw where it was
It was daylight, literally.
And, well, I know we were talking about. I mean, they did this technique, but in a much more interesting way in Fury Road. So that may have been the last time we talked about it. But all those nighttime shots were actually daytime shots, and
got a lot better.
Might have been when we talked about it, or it might have been. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember though if it was a film.
We probably talked about it during Couch Party when we watched that, because it does seem like it was about that amount of time ago.
Yeah. That one worked for me because of the weird blue hue to everything. And I don't know. There's something about it I liked, but I don't normally like that. I guess I didn't notice it here, but again, I felt like I was watching network television 1985 quality stuff until the final quarter. Then I went, oh, right. This is amazing. This is all good here. I don't dislike any of this business when he really goes off. It's after she dies. He gets her little good luck charm, which Dunaway mentioned is not very much good luck if you die while you're wearing it. From then on, when it's a revenge movie, oh man, it's great.
Yeah, the revenge movie is where Rambo excels, right?
Yeah,
totally.
Taken so much.
Yeah,
I want an hour and a half of him. Like, he's in the mud. Oh, look, there's his eyes, and now he's under the water. And this time he's down in the pit of rocks.
Yeah,
isn't that part three? Isn't that what they do in part three?
Don't spoil it. I haven't seen it.
I'm sorry. My bad.
This is my first viewing of. of two. Two. This is only my second Rambo film.
Oh, I can't wait to hear what
unless you count Hot Shots Part 2, which I think is a very
you can
good,
count it.
It's a very good Rambo film.
You can't look up Rambo Part 2 without that Charlie Sheen cover box.
Charlie Sheen, totally ridiculous. True.
Yeah, it's impossible not to. Did you? So, wow, that I didn't know this was your first viewing. Had you seen?
I thought
first
more about UHF, Weird Al Yankovic's Rambo parody in that than I did about Hot Shots Part 2.
Did you see the first? Go ahead, Scott. Did you see First Blood back in the day, or just
not back in the day? First time I saw it was with you guys.
For
Film Sack.
That blows my mind.
It was like back in the 80s. I said, you know, someday there's going to be this thing called podcasting, and I'm going to do a film show with three other guys, and this movie will be perfect for it. So I'm not going to see it now. I'm going to wait 25 years.
I can wait.
We all have these, right? We all have this, like, everyone in the world felt like I saw a thing that we missed for some reason, and this is yours. But it's interesting because I'm fascinated by that because as a 15-year-old, I was losing my mind about how great this was. I thought 2 was amazing. My parents, this was forbidden. I went and saw it with friends and told my parents I was seeing some rated PG thing. I went and saw this instead. So I've got all this, like, baggage about that time, and then so seeing it now, I'm seeing it through those eyes a little bit, and you're seeing it through, hey, it's an old movie I've never seen, here we go.
You were 15, kind of. Scott? How old were you at this time? About 15 as well? Or
Scott and I are only like 2 months
interesting.
Even maybe 1 month apart.
Something
he's
like that.
July 1969, I'm August 1969.
Yeah.
Nice. So we'd have been 2 weeks. Yeah. You're 69, dudes.
Nice. Oh, sorry,
we'd have been 15, almost 16 at the time but this was going on.
There was also a thing where people that I knew and talked to regularly in school, but maybe didn't like so much, raved about this movie, and that kind of turned me off from seeing it because it's like it was kind of a jock toxic masculinity.
That's
the opposite of the 80s effect, right? Because the 80s was all about the rise of the moral majority, and whenever you were told from some authority figure in some church that you shouldn't go see something, that made you want to. Right.
Yeah.
Not always, fascinating. Though, yeah. You know, we had talked early pre-show. We talked about James Cameron being involved with this. One of the things that Cameron wanted to include in the story was that Rambo needed to have a companion, and that companion was a techie geeky kind of guy. And Stallone was like, I don't think so. And that is the absolute right choice to go with because this film was rated R. So it was more appropriate for the 15 to 18 year old crowd, as opposed to if you had like a quirky sidekick, it'd probably be more like a 13 year old.
Stallone insisted on
PG-13,
the character being given the literal code name Lone Wolf. Like,
yes,
like that's it's a totally different character if you give him a sidekick.
And that was, by the way, that sidekick go ahead.
Oh, as you say, it's the only time you ever hear that name, right? Is just when the Russian leader guy is reading the transcript and saying, "Oh, funny names, Lone Wolf."
I think he said that when he's on his way back in with the helicopter.
I love the whole idea
that it's like, "Oh, y'all won't come pick me up in the helicopter? I'll freaking go get a helicopter and I'll fly these POWs out myself.
I'm fly this janky ass,
freaking MASH helicopter back to the thing." But here's the deal with that. He did. It's the right move. Cameron was wrong, I believe, to want to have the geeky dude with him. But what I like about that trivia is that they were eyeing, and it looked like it was going to go down, but they were eyeing John Travolta for the role of the geeky sidekick. And part of me just wants to see what that was. I don't need it now. Right, you know, Johnny. I don't want it to be in this timeline that we all live in. But I'd like to just for a second,
I like that idea,
just branch out
timeline Rambo.
Yeah, I want to go on to that timeline. Just watch the movie, see what they did with him, and then come back. Yeah. You know, because they did give him, they compromised, right? They gave him this.
We're using a short wig.
They gave him. They gave him Co.
Find our way back now.
Oh man,
he ended up giving him Co. instead, who was the lady who that got killed, essentially his motivator.
Oh yeah.
Oh, by the way, do you want some trivia about her that drove me crazy? Because so she's fine in this. But
broken English. Does she speak proper English? I was trying.
Well, that's what I wanted to share with you. So I thought her broken English was pretty bad, and it felt almost offensive the way it was being portrayed.
Yeah, almost offensive, right on the corner.
So I went and found this. This is what she really sounds like.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for having me on your show.
Oh yeah. So according to what I've read, you went from model to Shakespeare to Rambo. I mean, that's quite a progression. Can you walk us through that?
God, she sounds like
a
dude.
I was well known in Hawaii as a model because it's a very small island, and there were only a few of us girls that were working regularly.
So as you can see,
yeah.
She didn't sound like that.
She sounds like there was no Karen sense. In front of me at the Starbucks. Yeah.
There was no sense in having her do the broken English thing. There was no point in it.
Yeah, I would have preferred just an accent, like an actual Vietnam accent from someone who is native to the country of Vietnam.
Right.
That I would have preferred because it just would have felt more authentic. This felt like, oh, she's clearly not Vietnamese.
Yeah, I mean, because her broken English felt forced. She's Singaporean. I could feel it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's Singaporean. She's born in Singapore. She grows up in England and then goes to college on Oahu. That's a lot, man. That's a lot of not Southeast Asian.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You're not wrong. So she just sounds like us, and it's fine. You know, this happened all the time, especially back then. And it just took me out a little bit because I just felt like she didn't feel as authentic to the role as she could have.
Yeah,
she's fine otherwise.
Were they trying to do it to make us make her feel vulnerable or something? I couldn't understand why they tried to have her had the broken English either.
I don't know.
Maybe. Couldn't quite place
I don't
it.
Know.
At least they didn't go so far, you know, as far as like a short round kind of
right.
Right.
That would have just gone.
I think short round's less offensive. I think
I do too because short round because that guy sounds like
so
that.
Hilarious.
Yeah. Plus he sounds like short round. Like he listening to his Golden Globes acceptance. Short round.
Actually, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it's not like all right, we need you to sound more
impressions. Yeah. The impressions we did of Short Round were offensive, but his actual impression was it was pretty good.
Yeah, it was not bad. Yeah.
What I wrote down was Julia Nixon is too pretty for this part, and they shot her pretty as well. Yeah. Like they really went out of their way to get these beauty shots of her where her hair is perfect. And she's been walking through the jungle and like sleeping outside and her hair is perfect. And she's looking just past the camera with those eyes. And like the whole first half of the movie, I'm going, they're going to kill this woman. There's no doubt in my mind that the script is going to kill this woman. I didn't know it was going to be the trope of the kiss of death, but here it comes.
If you didn't know, all you have to do is read the description of the film. It says in it that she dies. And I'm like, thanks, description.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was like, thanks, description. You go to Google. If you Google Rambo, like, yeah, it's right there. It's like one of the first results. I'm like, come on, man.
Yeah, it's weird.
Well, another main trope in this movie is one man army, and right on. I mean, he is definitely a one man army. He is comparable to John Wick or Jackie Chan or Jet Li or whatever. But this character of Ko, she is the reason that he actually makes it through his imprisonment. Yeah. She is a serious commando. Like she does things that he couldn't do, you know.
And then she got bullshit shot, right? That was crap. Like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it was good. But it set up nicely the revenge for the guy getting the explosive arrow, where he wasted one explosive arrow on one guy, and that's the most iconic thing from the movie. If you were to point at a thing and go, "What do you remember about Rambo or Part Two?" You'd go, "Oh yeah, that guy getting shot with an explosive arrow at slow motion with all that
the distance from the waterfall."
Ooh, and I don't know.
The thing I think that gets parodied like that you know, I brought up the Weird Al Yankovic parody, but that's totally where it comes from is that specific scene where, you know. Top. It's the random, you know, shouts that he does, and then the shooting the guy. And I can't remember whether it's Hot Shots Part 2 or UHF where he shoots the guy with an explosive arrow, and then they look back, and all are left are his boots with the smoldering stuff coming out of it. I couldn't tell you which thing that's from, but it's from one of those.
It's
two
one
things.
Of those. I think it's from Part 2 because I'd seen that, and I have not seen VHS, and I remember seeing that.
I just want to
argue. Or UHF, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
I want to argue this point so bad.
I've never seen that. Everyone always talks about it. I've never seen that movie.
Oh, my God. Yeah. We got to watch that. Not for this, though.
Not for Film Sack, you don't think?
Not for Film Sack.
Randy, you were being argumentative?
Yeah.
Yes.
Please continue.
Yes, because for my money, the most memorable thing from this movie has to be Rambo going to war against an empty room filled with boxes and computers.
Yeah. I completely forgot about it, but yes, it was quite the scene. I loved it.
It was good.
Especially because the very next scene, he's pinning down Murdoch, about to stab him and say, you know those other POWs out there? Find them. Well, we might have been able to had you not shot our compact.
Yeah, all of our shit, exactly.
I wonder if that was written in the original script is like his final aggravation, because if the original script called for this John Travolta techie type, and I suppose he must have died as well. Would he come back and then be really pissed off? You killed my friend.
maybe. But the thing is, like, that's the entire, like, whatever internet of the 85 era is right there in that room, and he destroyed it all and then demanded to go find them. Like, start over and go find them. That's a weird thing.
And then poor man's Ronnie Cox is in there eating his sandwich. What's going on out there? What's going on?
Poor man's Cox. Ronnie Cox.
I think it's Brian Cox is what I meant to say. My bad.
That's great.
Or Brian Dennehy. Like, this guy.
Brian Dennehy. Maybe that's where I'm going. Brian Dennehy. That's what I was thinking
of. Is this guy in the first movie? Like, they don't change this character much.
There it is. Yeah,
right?
Brian Dennehy.
Like, Dennehy in the first movie is a sheriff, right? And, like,
Brian Dennehy is
differences.
Mm-hmm. Brian Dennehy is fantastic now. I don't know if you've seen him in his older man age, but he was in First Blood. That's why I kept getting this confused. Yeah. I kept thinking he was in this one. I was thinking that Brian Dennehy was in this one. It was in the first one.
I thought Dennehy died, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think he did. I think both.
Yeah, he died. He did die in 2020.
Yeah.
Right. That's man, his later pictures
did
are great.
Did Brown die as well? I know that there was something like the two guys from FX, or maybe not. Maybe.
I don't know. But Krenna, the guy here, died as
Richard
well.
Krenna, yeah.
Yeah. That was a long time ago, I think. Yeah. Huh. But
again, another movie we need to add to the list is FX with the two Bryans.
Oh yeah, see, so that's a good one. I do remember that movie. That I remember FX2 being hideous or whatever the sequel was.
Right.
But
can we talk about Richard Krenna a minute?
Sure, why not?
Sure.
I think he's so good as this character. I just think he's so right. It's like he sticks to observing for the most part. Mm-hmm. You know, like he's an officer, and he is still a little bit out of his depth, but overall he's used to being in charge. And so he has to sort of stand to the side and, you know, he's kind of like the eagle eyes of the country.
Right.
And I just thought this guy really pulls it off. Richard Krenna gets it.
He did well in the first one as well as this one. He really does embody that. Oh, these are tough choices. I want to do right, but man.
Ugh. Totally. He shows conflict on his face like nobody else in this film. Just really, really, you know, like, oh, I report to this guy, but also I care about Rambo and I want to make sure he's safe and comes back alive. And yeah,
he's the reluctant hero, right? He's like, oh, in the moment, kind of, I don't know if I can step up and be like Rambo, but
Rambo's the blunt instrument. Rambo's the blunt instrument. And he's the conscience of of what all this is about. And that's important, I think. You could never have him go south or else you've ruined the whole series. Like,
who is Martin Cove then?
Martin Cove
is just extra. What is his role?
He drives a helicopter and looks like a dick. That's his deal.
Yeah, and grabs his belt. Like, is that, that's just such a Martin Cove thing, right? Standing with your thumbs in your belt, because he does that as Kreese. Or is it John Kreese? Is that the character's John name?
I think that's right.
Yeah,
and that was just the year prior. Like, he's having a moment here where he's getting all kinds of secondary evil guy roles. And that's all he
looks
plays.
Looks like he had served in Nam, right?
He kind of does. Yeah.
Sure. Like, this is right age.
It's haircut that looks like, you know, if you shaved it right, he could, there'd be a level. Like, you could put a level on there and it would look just fine.
I'd like to believe that if Stallone could have gone forward in time and watched Predator, which came out 3 years later, he would have made more of those guys standing around, those other commandos. They're not currently serving, right? Those guys are very interesting to us, but this was before that really became a big deal where you have, you know,
I think after watching this, I was kind of like, oh, I think Predators might have taken some of these, you know, some of these types of shots and cuts. I'm not sure, because I couldn't quite figure it out, but a lot of it did feel a little bit like Predator. And I love the scene where Stallone, he took one of the POWs and they said, you got to go back and get the others. And he says, I'll be back. And I'm like,
Nice. Yeah. Nice job. Nice job, buddy. You could tell he probably pulled that out. I didn't know this, but I was reading some like old trivia, deep rabbit hole stuff about him and Schwarzenegger. Those guys did not get along at first. They were rivals. They were pissed.
Absolutely.
They were like always trying to outdo each other.
The same space, right?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. And now they're like, you know, best pals, hang out all the time, business deals and stuff and whatnot. But at the time, I think there was probably a real competition there. Maybe sometimes that breeds good friendships later on. I don't know.
I think it does. Maybe. Because you're like I said, you both got basically the same goal. I love their places though. They don't see it. They didn't see it then, but you know, Stallone was really good at playing the flawed, broken hero, and Schwarzenegger was really good at just playing the, you know, just put together type hero. And you needed both of those for the different stories that everybody was telling.
Yeah. Did anybody else shiver when Stallone says he's expendable the first time?
Yeah.
I love it the first time. The 12 times they said it in this film.
Yeah, but the first time I was just like, wow. You don't often see a movie where the inception of a whole other movie
of an entire comes along like
25 years in advance.
You know? Yeah, that was pretty wild. I thought I capped it, so we'll hear it again at some point. But there is some scrutiny I have. I'd like to get this out of the way.
Scrutiny.
Trivia says, despite its anti-government stance, President Ronald Reagan, president of the time, was a huge fan of the film. Now, he may have been. How does anyone on IMDb know this shit? There's no citation.
Yeah.
How would you know that?
I don't necessarily think that Rambo is anti-government. I think he's anti-government corruption, right? Mm-hmm.
The whole point is he loves his country. He doesn't love how we do shit sometimes. That's it.
He doesn't mind. He doesn't mind taking orders and following through what you know the government says, but he just doesn't want to be stabbed in the back.
He has my attitude toward it. Accord to my country. I love my country. I love coming from here. I love everything about being an American. Except sometimes we're really shitty at shit, and it's okay to call it out. Like I like that about this.
Call it out.
Clearly, you hate the Constitution.
See, this is why I think it was important that he pushed Cameron so hard on that point. Because had it been just rah rah, nothing's wrong with
this
us.
Needed to be somewhat about that because we talked about a pre-show again. We were talking about how you know we were coming into the 80s and we hadn't really talked a lot about Vietnam. During the 70s because
the movies are the only place you could it felt like you get Platoon and freaking you know this to some degree and other things like sure those things came up but it was always Art having to talk about it felt like you know like
I thought it was good because he treated if I was a veteran of the Vietnam War and I went and saw this first of you'd be like oh come on that's not how that works at all but then you'd also be like you would also see that really sappy ending that a lot of people give this movie crap for where you know he's talking about loving his country and stuff. I mean there's probably a good bit of those people that were like you know what this is actually kind of how I felt about that. I'm not saying I'm not putting words in people's mouths. I'm just saying there's probably a lot of vets that
he probably felt like that. Yeah he probably was
talked a lot of Stallone talked to a lot of these guys so I think he probably knew.
Yeah, I think so. I think it meant something to him. And even whether it did or didn't, the when I'm happiest about my country is when we acknowledge that we're not perfect. And that's all this was. And it was good. It was good for me as a kid to see that during a time which was all just, it's a new day in America. It's like, F off. Is it really? Because is it, you know, I want it to be, but really, is it a new day for everybody? Well, it's a new, it's a breakfast time morning for an American. It's like, shut up.
The all new Ford F-150.
Like a rock. Anyway.
For a man. I didn't understand that. I was, go ahead.
You guys keep mentioning a particular person, but I want to talk about how this script was originally written by Kevin Jarre. The Kevin Jarre parts of what we end up seeing are very evident. Or is it George Cosmatos, the director? Guess what? George Cosmatos directed and Kevin Jarre wrote Tombstone.
Well,
I'll be Huckleberry. Look at that.
Oh my gosh. Why didn't that movie feel like an A-Team episode then? What happened there?
Because they got better at their craft. Okay. Like everybody involved got, you know, they got better equipment, better technology, better understanding of what they're supposed to do. They all evolved.
We can build it.
Yeah. And people will come. Yeah.
But then at the same time, George Cosmatos was a short-lived, very, very large man, did not want to like did not want to have a lot of like stressful work, right? He mm-hmm. he was from Italy, but lived most of his life in America, making a very small number of films, and then retired to Canada. After his like half dozen movies, he was done. Mm. And but that includes this and Tombstone, and I would like to now revisit Cobra, because maybe Cobra's a pretty good movie. Cobra.
Well, I want to watch Cobra so bad.
I always feel like we've done Cobra. I guess we haven't.
We have not. We did Over the Top, but not the Cobra.
I think Cobra got pulled.
I've never seen Cobra or Stopper, my mobile shoot, which
feels like enjoy Cobra.
Sister film.
Yeah, right. We should watch back to back. No, for real, Cobra. Cobra I've only seen once, and it was so long ago, I have no idea how it'll hold up. But I remember thinking,
trash.
Once again, Cobra is a screenplay by Sylvester Stallone. Again, I feel like I want to, in my life, see everything he ever wrote. Like, I like how he gives words to characters. Hmm.
I love how he gives words to characters, and I love how he's really good at manipulating some part of me that it just works every time. Like, even while I was watching this Rambo and everything that was going wrong, that I'm like, oh, that's cheese, that's crap, that's cheese. Still, something in me was like, rah, rah.
Yeah. Your younger man, your young I love 80s action guy was not to be held back, you know?
Right. I think it's something more than that. I think it's something deep down that he just gets it. And like with Rocky, when you're watching, I don't think it had to be from the 80s as a 13-year-old pulling for Rocky. I think it could be any age and go like, yeah. I think Rocky is, representing a country. I think even other places like yeah, Rocky. Mm-hmm. We saw Rocky. Even the Russians are like, yeah. Oh, that was in the movie. But still.
They might have liked it. I don't know. Who's to say? They probably loved it. Speaking of Russians, I like the Russian bad dude in this. I thought he was
the main dude, yeah.
Yeah.
I like how they brought it up to date and said, no need to be bad guys in this guy. Let's bring some Russians in.
Oh, yeah. Always bring the Russians in if it's the 80s. Yeah. They got to be the ones in charge now. I didn't know this, but Dolph Lundgren was signed as the Russian lieutenant. He was going to be that guy. And the guy that gave it to was Steven Berkoff. But the reason that it happened, or the reason he didn't do it, Stallone, it says here, the way it's worded is weird. He says Stallone realized that it was the same man who was going to be in Rocky V that same year. So they paid off the contract. So Lundgren got paid. He just wasn't in it.
Right. Which
is too bad.
That's even better.
Right? Wait.
Yeah.
I'm going to be in your movie.
Not be in the movie.
Right. Right. Plus, he didn't have to go sit in that 120 degree Mexico weather they worked in and all that. Like, he avoided the whole mess. And
it's funny. I thought, looking at the mountains in the background, I thought, oh, well, it's that same set of mountains they used for MASH in California, just north of like Ventura. Randy, you probably know better than I do where this stuff is located, but it's like you drive by those mines and go, oh, yeah, that's the 4077th is tucked somewhere in there.
Oh, no, that's between the valley and Malibu. That's out in the in the hills as you drive through those canyons going down to Malibu. I don't know exactly where, but you can look it up and go actually see the
yeah, don't they still, they actually even still have the, that stand with all the arrows pointing to San Francisco and Seoul and
I think it's out there, plus a couple of stunt jeeps that were all burned
something
up
like that. Yeah,
I still have some signs like that I made at Boy Scout camp. I was teaching a leather working class at Boy Scout camp, and I had like a lot of time on my hands, and I made signs that were very, very much like that MASH thing, only I was going from memory. but I still have that. I have that packed away in my garage because I put it up on the tent at Boy Scout camp.
Oh my gosh. I would love to hear you do. Can you do a leather working class instruction now? Can you give us a short one? Tell us how to get that done.
Oh, Scott is so boring.
I'm sure little balls about three simple steps.
Yeah, really.
You take a scrap of leather.
This is my three simple steps to leather.
You take a scrap of leather. You pick where you're going to put the stamp, and then you hammer the stamp.
Yep, that's it.
Just like a Saturday night at my house.
That's right. Hammer that stamp, baby.
Before we get too far away from it, I want to ask you guys, did you know that there is a new cut of Rocky IV?
No.
Did you know there's a new edited version of Rocky IV?
A cut? Why? To what end?
So at the beginning of the pandemic, Sylvester Stallone was home by himself. And he watched Rocky IV and was like, I don't like how this is edited. I don't like the story it tells. And I know there's other better stuff. And so he sat down and spent weeks and weeks recutting the movie and, you know, getting original footage and having people like punch up some of the visuals and so on. And it's it's called the Rocky X Drago cut.
Really?
Seriously. And it came out like you can watch this. You can I don't know, rent it on Amazon or something. The Rocky X Drago cut.
So this is a thing that exists and I could see it.
And I can see it with my eyes.
That blows my mind. I didn't know about this.
Hear it with my ears.
What?
I feel like it's something I should have heard about. That's wild. Didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah. If you go on Apple TV and spend $4, there's a thing that is called Rocky IV, Rocky versus Drago. And it says it's from 2021, but it's just Sylvester Stallone's director's cut. Like he decided to redirect the movie.
Kind of want to see it.
And I do too. Oh,
yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Very, very much. Should we sack it?
I mean, sure, we could.
Are we asking questions?
Yeah. We already
sacked Rocky IV, but I'm already like, I don't really remember sacking Rocky IV. I mean, I remember that we did it, but I don't remember anything about it.
I just remember Creed and Rocky dancing in the water and at the beach. Isn't that the same one? Is that a different one? Is that three?
Three.
Yeah, it might be three. That might be three.
Yeah, because Drago.
The ocean waves.
Yeah. Drago, remember, spoiler, Drago kills Creed.
What?
Which, somebody should warn.
On purpose.
Somebody should warn. Too hard, right? Someone warn Michael B. Jordan. It's coming. You know.
Right. Yeah.
At some point, a giant Russian's going to destroy him. He will break him.
Well, didn't Creed 2 deal with Drago's son or something?
Oh, well, it wouldn't have been his son though, because he's supposed to be. Oh no, he is Creed's son. You're right. Duh. In my head, I'm thinking Creed is about.
I was just talking about. I'm like, I haven't seen Creed. Did I miss something?
Not Creed. Drago's son.
No, you're right. You're totally right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I had it. I had
now
it.
We my, got yeah. Freaking Jonathan Majors in yet another movie this summer, and going to be killing it as
that
the
guy.
Of Creed 3.
Yeah. And isn't Michael B. Jordan directing this time? I think he is. So
probably. Yeah.
I think those movies are good. They're real good.
Right, we're gonna talk a little more about whether or not the first time we ever sack a movie twice is because there's a completely different director's cut. Because I'm very, very interested.
Yeah.
I'm
very curious about that.
What? Yeah, we're not gonna do it with Daredevil? Damn it.
Oh shoot. Well, that so something about the mystique of knowing he secretly made a recut during a pandemic. Yeah. There's something about that that's interesting.
And Scott and I were talking about director's cuts earlier this week.
Mm. Were we? What were we talking about? I don't remember.
Very interesting.
What was it? What were we talking about? I don't remember.
So you tweeted, was this the most film that was ever added to a director's cut about something?
Oh, I was making a joke. So the joke is, I can't wait. Here was the joke. I said, I can't wait for the director's cut of Batgirl because the rumor is it has over 90 minutes of unused material.
Nice.
Because the whole movie got canceled. See, so
I went and looked up a bunch of director's cut in information. Like I was just looking up trivia on director's cuts, and Once Upon a Time in America is the reigning champion of adding time in a director's cut. It's
not like Empire of the Sun or T2 or something like that. I would have thought the credits would go to that.
I don't have.
What's the one that you really like that where the original version is garbage, but the director's cut?
Kingdom of Heaven.
Kingdom of Heaven. There we go.
Kingdom of Heaven. Yeah. Kingdom of Heaven. This is good. Thank you for the opportunity for a moment to speak about one of the greatest director's cuts of all time. And Ridley Scott, known for good director's cuts, right? It's not the first time he's been around that wagon. But the theatrical release of Kingdom of Heaven, terrible. Historical drama about the Crusades. A horrible, horrible version in the theaters. Right. Director's cut, really long, like almost 4 hours. but hot damn, is that a better? It's so good. It's so much better. It transcends it. Anyway, there you go. I'm done talking about that again. So good.
So I found my notes. What I looked up led me to believe that the most time ever added to a movie in a director's cut was Once Upon a Time in America. It added 130 minutes.
It's a whole other movie.
Yeah. The theatrical release was 2 hours and 19 minutes long. The director's cut was 4 hours and 29 minutes long.
I had the double VHS set of that.
Really?
Yeah.
You still have it?
It was fantastic. No, I don't, actually. So, I don't know what happened to that.
So, what's funny to me is that Sergio Leone died after making this director's cut, right? And so this director's cut just lingers for like 20 years, and nobody is willing to say, this is not a good idea. Like, because he's a titan of filmmaking, right?
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, enough time passes that the Film Foundation got their hands on Once Upon a Time in America, and they're like, we're just going to trim this down a little bit.
Yeah.
It was 4 hours and 29 minutes long. Like,
it might be the only of the Westerns that he's famous for that I haven't seen. And I don't know why I've not seen it. This has what, De Niro in it? It's like set in the '20s or something. What is Once Upon a Time in America? Is that the one that I'm thinking of?
Yeah.
It has De Niro and James Woods and Joe Pesci, but I would not call it a Western.
Oh, hilariously, I thought it was a Western. I've never watched, even though I had the two
autobiographical or something, or is that? No, that's a different one.
Is it like the Italians are killing the Irish or some weird thing? I don't know. I need to see it.
I mean, that would fit, right?
It's about prohibition gang wars in New York City.
Okay, so it might jam completely. I would love to see. I don't know why I've never seen that. Just never got around to it. And that was also like 84, right? Right around this time, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Once Upon a Time in America is a very, very highly respected movie. I don't know that I want to watch it. Like, it's like Gangs of New York or The Irishman. I'm like,
I love those movies.
I'm tired already.
Yeah, but you just said two movies I love, so now I'm gonna watch it. I like The Irishman. I know people think it's too long. I don't. It's long enough.
God's like The Irishman.
I love it. On all these movies, I've done my time. I watched them.
You only need to watch them once, right? I've seen Goodfellas like seven times, something like that. That never gets old. I could watch Goodfellas today. That's one of them. I think it's a perfect film, but I don't want to watch The Irishman once a week. It's too long.
God, I don't even want to watch The Irishman a second time.
Yeah,
once was absolutely enough for that film.
Yeah, one time you're right. One time's enough for The Irishman, but it's still a good one time, right?
It's a good one time, but yeah, you're absolutely right. I would drop everything and watch Goodfellas this afternoon if I had the opportunity.
I would watch Casino slightly less, but still, I'd watch that again. But, you know, right. Scorsese movie. You know, another one I'd watch anytime is The Departed is amazing and never old. It's so good. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. The Departed. Oh. That's before Alec Baldwin shot somebody. He was still good then.
Right.
Too soon. All right, moving on. Let's see. Oh, I did want to share this bit of trivia here. The only film in the Rambo series to be nominated for an Oscar. Problem is, I couldn't find for what. Does anyone know what this was nominated for? Because I couldn't find it.
Oh, I got you. Hold on.
Best chain gun in a film.
It's a pretty good one. They talk about how he's good with light weapons.
Best use of pig shit.
Yeah, best use of pig shit. If that was... What was that?
It was nominated...
Oh, God, yeah.
It was nominated for sound effects. And...
Ooh, really?
Let's see. I just want to know who beat it.
I don't know about
there's
that.
There's like almost like an hour worth of sound.
There were only three nominees that year. It was beaten by Back to the Future.
Oh,
well, none of it makes sense.
Probably deservedly so. I don't think the sound work in this movie is that great. It's
the
okay.
The other nominee, also film sacked movie, Lady Hawk.
Oh my lord. Yeah, Lady Hawk. What was good about the sound in Lady Hawk? I don't remember.
You gotta have some nominees in order to give out an award.
That was it. It was the Hawk, the Lady Hawk.
Yeah, the Hawk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember Lady Hawks. I know we even films acted. I don't remember shit about it. I think my only memory of Lady Hawk is that it's got Matthew Broderick and Dabney Coleman, I think, right?
Not even close.
What am I thinking?
You're right.
There's so much, even though I've seen Willow a lot and even recently, there's so much that I think Lady Hawk
Yeah.
Then I think you later have to say, oh, no, that was Willow. Yeah.
Yeah.
They must have come out like right around the same time as each other or something.
Yeah. Plus it just, I don't know. Rutger Hauer in Lady Hawk? Yep.
Yes, he was in Lady Hawk. Yeah.
Okay.
Wasn't Val Kilmer's wife, short-term wife?
Oh, the one that left him.
Short-term wife? I want to watch that movie. No, short-term wife. Coming to Hallmark.
Coming to TLC, my short-term wife.
Val Kilmer's wife, Joanne Whalley, was in Willow.
Well, yeah, she was in Willow for sure, but I don't know if she was in the other one
or not. She's not in Lady Hawk.
I thought there was an overlap. She's not okay. I thought there was an overlap. Who's the woman in Lady Hawk? Who's
Michelle
the lady?
Pfeiffer.
Oh, that's Pfeiffer than Hawk. That. Okay. So you were thinking Hawk, which is an animal, which also a cat is an animal. So Catwoman, that's how you made the connection. I see how it went for you. That's
I've moved
fun.
It.
Yeah. Moved it, for sure. I also had a realization in this film that I think this is the movie, after watching that last quarter, especially, I think this might be the movie that got me interested in stealth gameplay in video games.
Okay.
Because I love the idea in a game, even specifically like in recent years, that Wildlands, Ghost Recon Wildlands, was a game set in the jungle. I love playing it solo. You could do co-op, but I liked it solo. And basically, you just drop you in this jungle, and you got to figure out a way to take out the 15 dudes guarding the drugs you're trying to recover or whatever. Yeah. And just one by one, pop, pop, stab, backstab, drag them into the bushes, throw them away, like all that stuff. I'm watching this. I'm like, I think this might be where my brain goes when I play those.
That montage was beautiful.
Yeah.
It's the it's the thing that I love most about Batman, Arkham City.
The Arkham games.
You've just got to basically isolate each bad guy in a room, drop down, pick him up, break his neck, then move over to another guy, drop down, pull him out of the way.
Yeah, Splinter Cell's that way. I'm currently playing the new Hitman update, which is basically all that Hitman all day.
Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, that stuff's great. I think I'm not saying I wouldn't like those games without Rambo in my memory, but I think a lot of it may have, or maybe the fun of it came from this. Because, you know, seeing that and just going, oh, sneaking around, killing people like that. Look at his arrow, and he uses that for this, and then the other thing for that, and then he blows up some shit, and he's all by himself? This can't be. It's like a great power fantasy. It's really good. What else? I think that's really all there is. Is there anything else you guys have to say about this movie?
What struck you? I want to know, each of you, what struck you as too much? What thing, like, in the movie were you like, okay, that's a bridge too far. I just can't, my brain can't accept this.
This movie is what it is, right? It's like, it's hard to say, oh yeah, this is the thing that kind of took me out of the movie. You go into this movie with a certain level of cheese and you kind of expect things in that range. So it's hard to say, oh, well, this one thing was just too far. The thing that probably I mentioned before, the guy getting shot by the explosive tip arrow and then just blowing up. And completely disappearing is probably it for me, but still,
that's a fair one.
I've already mentioned mine. The bad broken English was just too far. Come on, just back it up.
Yeah, that threw me a little bit. I also think the idea that you would put this guy, what he did in the first movie was absolutely going to keep you in prison or on death row for the rest of your life.
Yeah, there's no way you kill as many cops as he did, and they go, 10 years.
Yeah, we'll give you 10. And getting a full pardon.
My memory of the first movie was that really all he does that whole movie is escape, and the cops kind of kill themselves. Like, they fall to their deaths or what have you.
Right. Then there's a couple of times, I think you're right, I think that's how it starts, and you keep thinking, oh, he could still get out of this. And then I think there's a tipping point where it's just like, okay, now he's just killing people.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember it that way, but I'm curious. Ibit, did you said, right, you're blowing up things. So Scott, what was, like, was there something in the movie where you're just like, it's too much?
Probably the government program to do what they were doing seemed just that seemed ridiculous to me, that you would have this high profile pull a guy out of prison because you need him for this and he's the only one that can do it, and then the whole time your plan was to, like, hopefully not find anyone alive, and if you did, just shut it down and not pick him up. And I don't know. That all seemed, I realize big powerful governments can do some dark shit, but that didn't seem
it was a lot to me. For me, without a doubt, the part of the movie where I had to close my eyes because I was so frustrated by the lack of reality was Rambo flying a helicopter around and as a single individual somehow attacking and taking out a camp full of Russian military.
But he went,
every time he shot. Yeah.
There's all these shots of a gun on the side of the helicopter firing itself.
Yeah, that was curious. I would figure that out. Is that mounted like that? And I was trying to figure that out too.
Yeah, they made it seem like a single individual could operate all those weapon systems while flying around. And also, by the way, he's been keeping up to date with his helicopter pilot practice. I don't know. That whole thing was just so far beyond reality for me.
It was a little much, But it was fun, and I don't remember it. That's the other weird thing. My only memory of the final battle was all the stealth takedowns and then the one explosive arrow on the guy for revenge. And then him running away from the napalm drop or whatever that bomb was. That's it. I don't remember this thing with the helicopter sequence at all. Uh-huh. And I don't know why.
Yeah. And then pretending that you're disabled and dead to lure the Russian helicopter.
That was
helicopter
great. Oh, there's no way you could see somebody that far away. You just blow
through,
it up.
Through the broken glass of the helicopter and the muck and the... there was a lot of that stuff. Like the, you know, when they're yelling back and forth like, oh, he's stuck on the rope because of turbulence or whatever. The door is open. You're on a plane, like flying, you know, right above the ground with the door open. You're not going to be able to yell and hear the helicopter pilot back and forth like, oh, he's stuck. The turbulence will kill him.
Not only would they not be able to hear that, but also I thought that was just a waste of time. They didn't need that bit. There didn't show anything cool about anything.
Just went, oops, drop my bags. I don't have them now. I mean,
even that. Right. All he lost was the camera, right? Because he still was running around the airport with the belt with the two blades stuck in the sides.
Everything that he had packaged up to wear on his body, but like a bunch of other stuff he had lost. But yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I just felt like, well, why? What was that about? Like, was it just to show him losing his gear?
I guess there was a deleted sequence of showing him because now he drops down miles farther than he intended to be, right?
Yeah. Right.
So, and he needed to meet up with the woman.
Did he just happen to run into Co along the way?
So, like, there's a deleted sequence apparently of him hoofing it through the jungle.
Mm.
Like,
oh,
he's showing you miles and miles of how amazing this guy is at making it to his target, even though he is now he's starting far, far away from where he intended.
What did he actually do to that snake? He just
grabbed it and looked at it.
He gave it a nap.
Then just released it once he gets determined, oh, this one could hurt me.
This one doesn't have the venom I'm worried about. I'll just walk away now.
Right. Right.
Yeah, just that like was
the chicken.
Yeah, the chicken, dude.
The poor chicken.
The poor chicken.
No animals were harmed in the film except for that chicken.
Yeah.
Except for that chicken.
But that slow zoom on the chicken was killing me. Oh, my gosh. Like, I'm getting an idea.
I remember the first time my grandmother had me participate in, you know, the killing.
Chicken killing?
In preparation of a live chicken.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, oh, that's a lot of blood. But nothing like this movie would have you believe.
Right.
This movie would have you believe that a chicken has a gallon of blood inside.
Yeah, more blood per chicken than is realistic. Yeah. I've killed a chicken. I did the same thing on a farm. They tried to show me what it took to get a chicken from the from the live pen to the table, basically.
Yeah.
And I did not enjoy that experience whatsoever. No.
I've told people many a times, if the end of the world comes, the only thing on my plate will be vegetables and maybe some fish. We'll be able to...
maybe fish.
Maybe.
Yeah. I think we'll be a lot healthier when the end
comes. Yeah, I might cook the skin off of it and deal with it.
I feel like if you can clean a fish, you can deal with a chicken. I just...
There's a big difference for me.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Very different. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, fish doesn't scream.
No.
When you look at a fish, you're like, okay. You're right. It doesn't scream. You look at the fish like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and a fish doesn't run around after its head's cut off and keep living for a minute. Like, it doesn't do any of that.
Why did you do to me? Yeah.
You don't have to hang a fish upside down to drain all the blood out of its body before you can start plucking.
Right. You want to get weird. You do a pig or a cow or something. What a nightmare. Yeah. I can't do it.
You don't have to even descale a fish. You can just literally cook it. I mean, and just you don't have to do anything except just throw it on the Barbie after it dies.
That's true.
On the Barbie.
For yeah, the 500th time, Scott, I wish we did titles for this show, because this episode would be called Fish Doesn't Scream.
Fish Doesn't Scream. I know. It just would be hard for people to tell what movie we're covering, but yeah, it's not bad.
Playoffs are near, and you know what that means, Alex?
Yep, Flippin' Bats will be staying up late and having all the fun.
From breaking down the most important stories and games, nobody's done what he's doing. Nobody, not even Babe Ruth.
To interviewing baseball's biggest stars.
I felt like I was pitching more stressed. I was trying to be so perfect.
No one covers America's pastime like us.
So as we sprint towards this year's World Series on Fox, please make sure to listen, follow, and subscribe to Flippin' Bats with Ben Verlander and me, Alex Curry.
Baseball is fun, and so are we. We're going to have fun, dang it. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, well, let's move on to some clips here. I got some clips, and they're ready to go. For example, this one. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, we didn't. You know what we didn't do? Hold on.
What's that?
Before we go on.
What grossed Scott out the most?
Gross.
Yeah, what grossed me out? You'll be surprised. It's not the poo, because that's just an idea.
Gross in this film.
The pig poo is obviously not really pig poo. So as gross as it looks, I'm not like, I don't know what they used, but I know it wasn't pig shit. So I'm not that worried about that.
I'm trying to think if anybody stuck their fingers in their mouth or puking or anything like that. I can't think of any of
it. Maybe it was that. Maybe that sandwich they was eating.
Sandwich. Oh man!
Oh, man, that's pretty good. That should be on the list.
Can I just tell you mine?
Yeah, go ahead.
I always wonder if Scott's anywhere near me.
All right.
Freaking Murdoch sweating.
Oh, everybody sweats.
Like, oh, hey, everybody in this film. Yeah.
Oh, you're in the department, dude. You're right close.
Murdoch, in particular, the first time we meet him, he's like covered in sweat, and then they get up close to him. Someone gets close to him, and I'm just like, that guy stinks. You can just smell him through the screen.
Well, you basically nailed it. My gross moment was being trapped in that base with all those sweaty old men. That was it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're all fully sleeved up, just pitting out, sweating you could smell that place. Get the F out of there.
Totally. And Charles Napier.
Cove smells the worst of all of them.
Oh, Charles Napier, though, he looks like the kind of guy who would tell you that he never uses deodorant because it's a scam. Like, there's something about him, you know?
Well, you should, right? That's the joke. Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that. He's for all I know, he's a real nice guy. I don't know that guy.
Yeah, I think I met him at Dragon Con once, like half a second.
Yeah, it's supposed to be nice. Yeah. But boy, nice, that dude was never going to play a hero of any kind. His job in Hollywood.
He looks like a bad guy.
Yeah, his job in Hollywood, 100% of the time, is to be a bad guy. That's it.
Yeah.
I don't think once anyone approached him and said, you want to be the protagonist of our cool movie. No. You're going to be the antagonist, or at the very least, a side character who's a dick. That's your job. Don't be trying to be Tom Cruise.
I think he could play a dick that takes a turn at the end. I think he could do that.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, dick turn. He could do a dick turn.
Totally.
I think so. I think you're right. All right, here's the actual clips now. Let's start with this one. He's talking to Johnny and asking how he's doing.
How are you, Johnny?
Good.
That's all.
Now, he really said that's all to the other guards that were there watching, but it sounded like...
Just wanted to say you're doing. That's all.
And I love how he says, let's see, in the middle here, let me play this again.
How are you, Johnny?
He says...
Good.
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 Good. All right. Do we get to win this time?
Do we get to win this time?
Sort of.
Oh,
you sort of do. Maybe in three you do. You know? Maybe in three you get to win. Probably not, but... Anyway, don't hold your breath. Karate Kid guy, here he is, Martin Cove doing his thing.
You're the chosen one, huh? You made a hell of a rep for yourself at NAMM. Anyway, I'm glad to be working with you. Flexing up the heavens, but at least you're out of the joint.
I love that he would just refuse to say anything to Martin Cove. It's like, nope, I'm not talking to you, dude.
How about we strike first with no mercy?
Sweep the leg.
Sweep the leg. You know.
Sweep the leg.
Sweep the leg.
No, I'm talking about.
That's great. I like this guy.
Party time.
Party time. I like that guy.
Excellent.
Yeah, I don't know who that was. It does sound like
party time.
Excellent. Party time. What's this? Want to eat something? Anyway.
Want to eat? Maybe later.
Oh, want to eat?
Want to eat?
Know what I mean, huh?
Want to eat?
You want to eat?
You got to pair that up with, are you hungry?
Are you hungry? Oh, I should have done that. Damn it. Brian's got all the good ideas today.
Oh, it's all right.
All right. This is a take I would have redone because he said as planned. So listen to this.
You said we'd go through as planned.
He said ass plan.
Yeah, that's right. You go in first with your ass.
Ass plan.
He said, I know he meant to say as, but he...
You said we'd go through as planned.
He said ass planned.
Ass planned.
Yeah, I don't like it. Epic Rambo slap. All right, that's a good one.
On the boat. Man, he got smacked so many times in this film.
Got banged up.
I want somebody to slap me to where I can just put my head back and just look them dead in the eye. Like, come up, slap me, and I'm just going to look them right back. I'm not going to go, ow, or what'd you do that for? I'm just going to, like, stare him down. Like,
let's do it in Vegas. Let's try it.
All right, okay, we'll have a little slap fight.
A little slap fight. Like that Russian slap contest thing people are all into now. We'll do that.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no, please don't.
Dude, what is that? And let me ask you something. I know the UFC just bought some version of that, and they're going to start showing it more and all that. Just standing there and taking a hard slap and see if you can do it the hardest is just tantamount to let's get straight to the concussion and forget about all the skill.
Yeah.
I don't get it, dude. Really don't. It's about some of those people get all swole up and stuff. Now, I watched some little people do it, and that was great.
Because I know some weird TikToks, man.
Because you're wrong.
Are you talking about people who are not large? Are you talking about?
No, I'm talking about little people.
That was on TikTok.
No, that's where I first saw it. Yeah, and then I branched out and found some YouTube
little
videos.
Little person slap fight.
Little person slap fight. And these people are barely touching each other, and it's that one I can deal with. Like, it's not that.
That's hilarious. That's comedy.
Because they don't have strength. They don't have the arm strength. So it's just like a little bit of a tap, and I just don't want people to get hurt. Is what I'm saying.
You said this show was coming. I'm sorry, it's done. Came. It's on TBS. There's already 3 episodes out. It's called Power Slap.
Yeah, it's UFC joint.
Don't watch it.
Don't watch it. It's bad.
Don't watch that.
It's really messed up. All right, here's your Expendables reference.
Rambo, you're not expendable.
I will be in a few years. Make a whole series of movies.
Bambo,
make
Bambo, you're not
expendable. I'd like to bring you back for that movie.
The whole movie, up to the point that she kisses him, the whole movie, I'm thinking, what's really interesting about this character to me is that he doesn't feel things exactly. Like, he clearly has feelings, but I guess he doesn't accept pleasure, is what I'm thinking. Like, he's just not a pleasure seeker in any way, shape, or form.
No.
And
he's a war machine.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so when she goes to kiss him, like, I mean, my brain explodes with, oh, no, she's dead. Mm-hmm. Right. Because like he can't have that. Like at the very, very end of the movie, his final words let you know that he does have big feelings. But I'm saying, like, in terms of like a mate, that's not in Rambo's toolkit. Right,
I think he's in love with the POW, the skinny one with the bad teeth. That's what I think was going on.
the only one he carried around for a while before he finally went back and got the others. Yeah,
that guy. He's got 1 year disease. He's got years disease where he goes, "What year is it anyway?" And he says 1985, and he just spends like 5 minutes.
I really wanted them to kill him right as he got to the helicopter, so I could go, "Come on, no,
you can't kill him."
You have to hammer the trope alert, but the very next time you say, "What year is it?" That was the most. Yeah. That was so tropey, guys.
Yeah, it's super tropey.
What year is it?
I love that.
I didn't like that.
I love it. I don't. I have no complaints in this case because the guy just looks so forlorn. Like,
I thought it was 1972.
Yeah, I didn't like that because he was like, he just got through saying, "Oh yeah, they take us to that one place once a year," and I'm like, "Then you know what time is."
Yeah,
you know what it is.
Tracking time. If it's once a year, you could count the number of times they've taken you.
Yeah,
how long it's been.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Because now we revolt. Now we riot. All right, here's one where we just get his name.
Rambo.
All right, so there's that.
Rambo.
Russian guy. Here's him.
I do not know who you are yet, but I will.
Had a little bit of a Christoph Waltz kind of vibe.
Thank you, Steven Berkoff, for that accent. Yeah. Wow.
And for the one, basically the very little talking he did. He did some more talking during the torture scene stuff, but not a huge role. Still good, though. Yeah, I liked him.
Yeah,
not our first Steven Berkoff appearance on Film Sack. He was in Outland.
Oh. Okay. Do I remember Outland? I don't know.
It's High Noon in Space is Outland.
Oh, Outland, right.
Space Truckers?
No.
Oh.
Sean Connery, right? Is that the one?
Yeah. Right.
Yep. With all the lights inside the helmet.
Two of them on a space station there.
And he's outside, he's climbing the thing. And he's,
Yep. He's got they got fantastic inside helmet lights in that movie.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good stuff. All right, coming to get you, Sly.
I'm coming to get you.
Oh no, he's going to get him. Sorry.
I love when he's mad at Murdoch.
Yeah.
He grabs that microphone,
squeezes the microphone stand like
any chance to flex.
Then he unleashes on those two guys. Like, all right, well done.
Yeah. Yep. He was pissed. He was going home.
Rambo can use anything as a weapon, including a microphone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Microphone stand weighs about 100 pounds. Yeah.
Yeah. Or a Dodge Ram or a bow. Here's I got some Brian Ibbett audio. This is from,
insertion in 30 seconds.
Wow, not that, unfortunately. This is a prom date clip your mom sent me. This is, let's see. Oh, this is your date after seeing what color of cummerbund you chose for your prom night.
Okay.
And this is what you said.
You make good choice.
Oh, she said that. I think you make good choice.
Excellent.
Yeah, you make good choice.
It was raspberry. It was a raspberry cummerbund.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. If you watch a video that is nothing but ash covered weird old people in black and white, then
you're just a tool.
You're just a tool. All right. Mm. Very nice. And then finally, what is this outro music? I need answers. God. Here you go.
This is Frank Stallone, my friend.
This is Stallone's brother.
Yeah, listen to this.
We gave it all.
Oh my lord.
Flaming the fire burns forevermore. Sorrowing believer.
It's horrible.
That's Frank. Is that Frank Stallone?
Frank. Yep, yeah, that's Frank Stallone. That's his brother.
I feel like this is the best example I've ever heard of the kind of music that they make fun of later in like the 90s and 2000s.
Oh yeah.
When you know, like when someone like Seth MacFarlane is making fun of a song from the 80s.
This it's bad. Ugh. That's just terrible.
Yeah.
And I'm not even like putting this at the feet of nepotism. I think they probably all thought this sounded fine at the time.
Yep.
But now,
was he a vet or something? I wasn't sure.
Frank?
I go back and look. Yeah.
I don't
know. Did he like serve? Was this kind of like a,
I don't know.
Give my, let's honor some of these guys.
Frank Stallone. Let's just look him up. He is, okay. Oh, he is older. He's older than his brother. He's 72 years old now, so that would put him in the age range, maybe. Let's see. Early life, career. Nope, nothing in the no military. Nothing
listed. Okay.
But here's the songs he's known for. Case of You from the album Heart and Souls, whatever that is.
That's not like a 12 pack, that's a case, right?
I'm in love with a case of you.
There you go. That's not it. Let's see. Far Far From Over from the Staying Alive soundtrack. Terrible.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Oh, God. Yeah. He did a lot of stuff for. Didn't he write or direct Staying Alive? He was somehow involved a lot with that.
Oh, if he directed it, he must want to have that burned from everyone's mind.
Yeah.
Because it's so bad. I think so. What a terrible movie. Also, Moody Girl and I'm Never Gonna Give You Up on that same album. And then let's see. Darlin' from 81. And then If We Ever Get Back, Frank, that's the one that's in this,
that's
right?
What listen to, yeah.
Yeah, and that's kind of it. You haven't done much else. Last album was studio album was Heart and Souls in 2007.
That's fine.
Yeah.
You did your thing. You did your thing. Good job.
Yep. You're out of here, bud. Yeah. You're out.
Nope. Sylvester Stallone directed Staying Alive.
He did
yeah.
Ooh, you lose points. He loses points for that. That's bad.
Yeah. I don't lose points because I didn't watch it, but Frank Stallone does appear in the film as Carl.
Okay.
There's some connection with Frank Stallone. And Carl, get back in the disco, Carl.
Oh, it's
Carl.
Such a bad movie, dude. 83.
That's one. Put it on the list, Randy. Put it on the list. We have to watch Staying Alive.
I don't know if I can do it.
You're doing it.
We got to do it. We have to do it.
Yeah. I can't think of a worse film, but if we do it, I'll
Johnny
do it.
Johnny Mnemonic.
Oh, I would take.
You watch, right? Are you still bitter about that?
I would take 9 Johnny Mnemonics over 1 Staying Alive. Oh, it's so bad.
Come on. It's got Cynthia Rhodes from Dirty Dancing. And
didn't help at all somehow. It's weird.
Nope.
So bad. All right. Moving on to, oh, that's all your clips. So now we got to do this here deal. It's the Film Sack Checklist, the coolest knife in movie history. Check.
Yes, the Rambo knife, as we called it.
When we were growing up,
I need to think about this.
Everybody wanted that knife growing up. We all wanted it. I had one too. I got it at this place called The Keyhole. It's basically like a Spencer's. It's gone now. Yeah, but you could buy full big old bladed knives there, and one of them was this Rambo knife, and it was so badass. You'd
pop it open, inside of it would be some waterproof or water resistant matches, and compass on top.
Oh yeah, you open the handle. Yeah, I do like it's a like a survival knife.
Yes,
I do like, you know, it's a serrated edge that just looks like it would cut through 2x4s like nobody's business. But yeah,
well,
okay, so I don't want to say that it's not the most iconic knife in movie history. I would like it to be tied for first.
With Crocodile Dundee's
knife? Yeah, with Crocodile Dundee's Bowie knife. Because that Bowie knife, that's crazy.
Well, that's not a knife.
I knew it.
And we're not going to, there's no way the Dundee knife is in here. We can't have that in the list. It's a stupid knife. It's fine. Maybe get
It's just a Bowie knife. That's all.
It's just a Bowie knife. It's stupid. It's fine. It's a stereotypic, hey, I got this in Australia knife. You know?
Yeah.
I kill big spiders. Look at me. I'm on the Barbie or whatever. You know?
The Barbie. I'm on the Barbie. I don't think you know how Barbie works.
No, I don't either.
When I was a Boy Scout, I did have a multi-purpose knife. With the thing where you screw off at the end, off the compass is in the butt of the knife, and you screw it off, and it's hollow up the grip. And man, I could pack a lot of stuff in that thing. Like not just some matches and a little bit of like wire, but like Oreos. you could get all kinds of you get food in there. You can get anything in there.
Yeah,
well, trail mix.
It's very nice. Oh, I didn't even finish these other two. Takes too long to get to the Rambo parts. Check. And then finally, the Karate Kid dude can't be a good guy in anything ever. Check.
Can't do it.
Yeah, Star Trek connections, bound to be some. Did Krenna ever make his way into Star Trek, I would wonder?
No, but I'll give you three.
All right.
So Steven Berkoff is in here, right? He's the Lieutenant Colonel Podovsky, right? Podovsky. I don't know why that's his name. Podovsky. I don't know. That's something about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was in an episode of Deep Space Nine. Charles Napier, our Murdoch, bad guy here, he was in two different episodes of Star Trek things. He was in an original series episode, and then he was also in an episode of Deep Space Nine.
Was he sweaty in either one of those roles?
Always sweat. Oh,
he'll
never
be dry again.
Be not sweating.
Any chance he wasn't?
Mm-hmm. I feel like our big hit here is Julia Nixon. So, Ko in this movie, she was in an episode of The Next Generation as Ensign Leanne Tsu. But where I remembered her, like as soon as I saw her, I remembered her. She's in an episode of Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm. It's in season two. It's called Paradise. And Sisko and the Irishman. my brain just totally dumped there.
Miles O'Brien. There you go.
My family is named O'Brien. Sisko and O'Brien get trapped on a planet that's anti-technology, and the people there are all anti-technology, and it's like now you're one of us, and they don't want to be there. And there's a main woman. I don't remember her name, but there's this other woman named Cassandra. In this like colony, and that's played by Julia Nixon, and she's really good.
All right, I remember very little of that one, but I kind of small memory of it. There's something about that your description that kind of
it's called Paradise. It's a very good episode of Deep Space Nine.
Paradise or Pair of Dice?
Pair of Dice.
Okay,
two tickets for that.
Two tickets, yeah, and also the girls are better there or something. Paradise City. Wait. All right. There's too many references at once. Let's move on now to the soundtrack grade. I give it an NJGBW for not Jerry Goldsmith's best work. That's all. That's all I'll say about that. It's not terrible. It's just not his best work. That's fair.
I feel like if you take the opening and closing music from Predator and put it over the opening and closing crap in this movie is spectacular for music. It's just the beginning and end are terrible.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Let's move on to the Twitter post or the social media post, whatever you want to call it. This is where you guys in 280 characters or less, soon to be 4,000, will answer your thoughts as to what you think this movie's like. Let's start with Randy.
Rambo : First Blood Part II. A convicted felon, a man named Dick, a man named Doc, a man who runs a karate dojo in Simi Valley, several Asian men all pretending to be Vietnamese, a couple of Mexican men pretending to be Vietnamese, some Englishmen pretending to be Russians, and exactly one and only one woman in the universe. Mm. Just like a Saturday Night at Ibbotson.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Here we go. Yeah.
Forgot about the motorcycle woman.
Mm-hmm. Who? Wait, what?
Motorcycle lady.
I don't remember that. What? Wait.
So a horror shows up on a scooter. Brian Dunaway is trying to add to my joke when I specifically thought I'm not going to put the phrase horror on a motor scooter.
Motorbike.
Mm-hmm. Motor hooker.
Yeah.
Motorboat. What should call her? A cyclo horror? What should call her? Cyclo horror? I forget. She had some kind of phrase for it.
My friend, please punch up your own jokes.
I like the add-on.
Stop making your so punch audible.
There you go. All right, let's go with Dunaway. Your turn. Let's see what you do.
Rambo First Blood Part 2. TriStar Pictures presents Rocky with a gun. # helicopter chain gun go brr. Rambo go ah.
I like the brr. Brr is fun for a fast shooting gun, you know?
Do you think, Dunaway,
don't punch up.
Do you think they write out the whole moaning, growling? Do you think they write it out in the script?
I think it is probably put Rocky yells. Yeah, something like that. Right. Yeah. Except it's Rambo, of course.
Do you
think he intentionally makes his mouth do what it does when he yells?
Like Elvis kind of.
I think he has no choice, right?
Is it just part of him? Okay, it might be.
Doesn't he have like partial, like not paralysis, but he's got
facial,
like
facial paralysis?
Yeah, he's got some kind of. I can't remember. I've read about it before.
Rambo's palsy?
Yeah.
Rambo palsy.
Yes. I love the idea of Stallone wearing glasses over a table, and he's writing a script, and he writes out Rambo.
That's good. That's good stuff.
Yeah, he writes out, and then he looks at it, and he's like, no, it needs to be more like,
Yeah.
so he erases and writes it better.
Yeah. I like your concept of how it works is better than mine.
Yeah.
I want to see him do this.
Wavy red underline underneath it.
That's right. Yeah. Let's finish this out with Brian Ibbett.
Rambo, First Blood Part 2. What you call hell, he calls home. And what you call Hardee's, he calls Carl's Jr. And what you call best foods, he calls Hellman's.
He's always very contrarian. Nice.
That was awesome. All right. Well, with that done, it's time to do the alternate titles. And none of them are as good as Brian's, which was... No, I forgot it. What was it?
It was Reading Rambo.
Reading Rambo.
Reading Rambo.
So much better than either of these. But here's one. It was almost called Rambo Ram Blows More Than I Ram Member. What?
I love it, actually.
I don't remember. Rambo Ram Blows More Than I Ram Member. Anyway. And then Apocalypse Knot. All right. That's the other one. Apocalypse Knot. Enjoyed that. Yeah.
Right. So not Ram Boat.
No, not Ram Boat. I could have.
Rams the boat. No.
Yeah. It was just the mood I was in. These good ideas just weren't coming to me. But here's an idea. Let's read an email from a listener. Filmsack@gmail.com is where this was sent. This is from Craig in Rock Hill, South Carolina. How far is that from you? Where is that?
Not far at all. A couple hours.
Yeah? You want to go hang out with this guy and, you know.
Sure, let's go. Let's go hang out.
Touch wieners? We'll
talk about movies.
Oh, okay. That's better. Hello, SBBNR. I am a little behind, so I apologize if you've talked about this or have been emailed about it from others. I just listened to your Daredevil episode and wanted to point out something that you did not know. You talked about the Daredevil comic origin of pushing a man out of the way of a truck and nuclear waste from that truck hitting Matt, causing his blindness and heightened senses. Well, did you know there is more to that story? The waste then went into the sewer where the rat and four turtles got hit with it. They became Splinter and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I don't know if it was ever officially stated that they are connected, but you can find that same comic origin in TMNT and that was it. They didn't specifically name Matt Murdock, as it was a different company, but it was too similar to not at least be an homage to the show, Craig. I don't know if it was ever confirmed, was it? I don't know.
Well, I mean, I like it. Regardless,
that first issue of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That's the thing, right?
Yeah. They didn't think they were going anywhere with that comic. You know that, right?
Yeah.
They just thought this will be a nice, fun.
They probably thought short run.
Yeah.
Right. But they didn't know it was going to become a giant hit, or at least the way it is today. But I love this idea. It's fantastic. Yeah. Even if it's fake, I love it.
I know. Yep.
Another quick one. This is, let's see. This is from, these are texts actually. So let's move on to that. 801-471-0462 is the text line that you can use to get your texts in. You can also leave us voicemails there. I love getting those. Regarding film sack of Moonfall, the premise is kind of a ripoff of Moon Trap back in the late 80s, starring Walter Koenig and Bruce Campbell. Astronauts find an AI booby trap on the moon. So every time civilization gets advanced enough to reach the moon, they find a robot egg that wipes out civilization and humanity has to start over. That sounds like a total ripoff.
I've never heard of this. 1988 Moon Trap?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
80. I know nothing about
80s. No, this isn't late 80s. Oh, was it 88? Okay.
88, 89, something like
Walter
that.
Walter Koenig, really?
Rip off if you have never heard of the original.
Yeah. I kind of am interested.
I am totally interested in this. This is my jam right here. Come on.
Walter Koenig didn't know he did anything in the late 80s other than Star Trek stuff.
And by the way, if I've never seen something and you give me the big twist ending, you just ruined the movie.
For me. Yeah. You know us with our worries about spoilers for the films we watch.
I'm not worried about it. Right. Yeah.
One final one
for me.
Here's one final one. This is a final text. It says, Scott, guarantee the reason you thought De Palma was behind 8mm was because Snake Eyes was released very close to it. I do that a lot myself. I think this person is, they didn't leave their name, but I think they're right. I confuse those two all the time. Yeah. In fact, 8mm and Snake Eyes both, do they both have Nick Cage in them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's why I do it. Yeah. I don't know why I mix them up, but I do. And I guess
they were probably right around the same time. That's what I do. Like, right. You know, late 90s, early 2000s. No, early 2000s.
Early 2000s. Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, was it? Oh,
yeah. I thought so it was later. Snake Eyes is 98, 8mm is 99.
Oh, okay.
There you go. Yeah.
All right. So I guess I take it back. We could see 8mm and we'd be okay, I guess. It was Snake Eyes I didn't like, I think.
Right. So 8mm Schumacher, we definitely could see.
Oh, it's the other one then. I have it backwards. Yeah. All right. So, that's the deal there. Oh, and you know why I might also confuse them is because the De Palma movie we did watch with Travolta was basically snuff audio. Right. And this is snuff film, and I just think they're the same. I don't know what's wrong with me. It's my brain.
We're not the same.
It's my neural pathways. let's get to the Patreon mentions now. I don't know where you people are coming from, but we love you all. You just keep coming out of the woodwork and supporting us, and I just love you all for it. We got these brand new people this week, like CJ, Tenacious Warden, Rachel Gregory, Greg Skinner, TV's Egon, love him. Ian B and James Hartman, man, you guys rock. Thank you so much for being brand new members of the Patreon FilmSack community. You will know very quickly what it means to be that because you'll get cool, rad art in the month, film related art in the month from me. You'll get a special episode from one of the hosts each month. I think this month it's me.
No, it's me.
Oh, it's Randy.
Oh,
okay.
Is it Randy's?
I can never remember our damn order. I should write that down.
I've just completed a whole thing. It's a thing.
It's a thing.
A thing.
Excellent.
Thing, and I'm going to put it.
Watch for that. Dunaway's last month was awesome as well. If you haven't heard it, go check it out. No commercials ever. It's a fantastic time to be a FilmSack patron. So go check it out. Patreon.com/FilmSack. Our next movie will be. I don't know. What will it be? Does anyone know?
We're going to watch Iron Eagle.
Oh, yeah. Iron Eagle.
Oh.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't
We're going
even know.
Back home.
Maybe we're going to watch Top Gun.
Is what Top Gun Eagle.
Watch Iron Eagle.
Iron Eagle Top. Eagle. Top Eagle. That's next week. Line,
yeah. This has been waiting to be sacked for over a decade. And it's finally on HBO Max, which means we've got some time for it to see it. And so we're gonna watch Iron Eagle. Yep. And we're going to find out if that means after that we watch Iron Eagle 2 at some point soon, because that's also on HBO Max.
Oh, very nice. I swear this one's been on our must find when available list forever since we started, really.
Yeah.
So finally, Iron Eagle happening. Get your Lou Gossett Jr. pants on because it's coming for you.
Yeah, get your Queen singing fried chicken.
What?
Ready for this?
What? What?
Really?
Yeah.
What?
Okay.
I don't even know what to say.
Now I'm even more in.
Yeah, I was. If that is even a thing to be more in, we are that now. Anyway, Iron Eagle next week. It's on HBO Max, where all the good old movies seem to be at the moment. You can say what you want about their recent business practices with animation and other bullshit. They seem to be getting the good movies. So, well, the good bad movies, I guess I should say.
Anyway, just kind of movies.
Yeah,
just just to whet your appetite for Iron Eagle. The director of Iron Eagle, his very next movie was Superman 4, The Quest for Peace.
Oh, shit. Oh, that. What does that do to expectations? I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
They stay the same.
Shatters them.
Against the rocks, basically. Yeah.
Shatters those expectations. Anyway, that's next week. That's Iron Eagle. That'll do it for us. Our website is filmsack.com. Please go there on the frequent and use it for all it's worth. Filmsack@gmail.com is our email address. You can leave us those voicemails and text at 801-471-0462. And if you're down for checking us out on Twitter, you can do that at FilmSack. Find us wherever you get your podcasts and then review us there. That helps us in magnificent ways as well. Hopefully positive reviews. That would be nice. Anyway, that's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Just want to be loved.
And we'll see you next. We'll see you next time. Caught me off guard.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
Party time.
Party time.
Party time.
It's party time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.